Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 125. Today we talk about volunteer travel or voluntourism. Find out what kind of person is doing this kind of travel, what they're doing when they get there, and just who it is they're meeting on today's Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have one news story for you. Airbus and Shell Oil have announced a recent project where an Airbus 380 was flown with one of the four engines operating on a new alternative fuel, which is a gas to liquid. That is, they had taken natural gas and synthesized it to a liquid fuel, and the idea is something both cheaper and more green, less carbon emissions than standard jet fuel. They didn't publish any information about how more green or how much cheaper, so it's still very early news. The only good news really in this is they're at least looking at the issue, so perhaps in the future we'll be able to travel with a smaller footprint relative to global warming, but it's still wait and see. Link to that story in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Linda Stewart. Linda is the Executive Director of the Global Citizens Network. Linda, welcome to the show first.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be here.
What is the Global Citizens Network?
Global Citizens Network is a nonprofit organization based out of St. Paul, Minnesota that's in its 16th year. We've been providing cross-cultural expeditions to indigenous communities around the world.
Okay. And so what we're talking about on this show is volunteer travel, or voluntourism is the other phrase that's been used. Let's start with the why. Why, after I've been working so hard for the whole year, would I want to go and work someplace else?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've seen an increase over the last couple of years in individuals, families, groups, couples that are interested in an experience where they feel like they're able to contribute or give back. And so while going to see new lands, meet new people is still very enticing, there is something to be said about going and doing good. And that is an opportunity that Global Citizens provides with its cross-cultural trips and the service aspect on the trip. And there's an opportunity to meet others, meet friends, see new places, new lands, taste new foods. But then in addition, there's an opportunity to work on a service project that will make a contribution to the community where we're partnering.
Okay. And that's a bit of an unfair question because I've actually done 12 volunteer trips, I think, by my count. But it's something that I wanted to hear in your words. Before we get into specifically what you guys are doing, can you tell us a little bit more about what are the ranges of opportunities when we talk about volunteer travel? I know you were saying before we started recording that your group tends to focus more on a group trip, but there are different opportunities out there. And if you could lay that out for us, I think that would be helpful.
Everywhere you turn around now, you'll see volunteer opportunity. Voluntourism is on the rise. And one thing that our organization has maintained over the last 16 years is the opportunity to travel and volunteer together as a team. And so we do solicit in-tech teams, but also individuals are welcome to come and join us on any group trip. There is a wide range of opportunities. Others include individual placement. Some are in rural areas versus urban areas. Others may be more of a tutoring or English teaching placement. Mm-hmm. Others may be in orphanages. Our organization partners with indigenous communities and work with them on small-scale development projects of their choice. And so it often focuses on physical labor, construction of health clinics, schools, community centers, etc. But other projects may include, for example, in a village in Guatemala, in Cantel, we're partnering with the Mayan Peace Center on youth empowerment projects. And that is, again, of the community's choice and by their initiation and direction. So in Cantel, there's the center where the youth come and they learn about Mayan weaving, medicinal medicines, traditional dance, etc. And our presence there is really to also kind of validate the culture and the preservation of the culture. And so that's a really significant project that we feel like we're working on. So there's a wide variety of opportunity for people if they feel like they want to go together as a team, if they want to go as an individual. If they want to go 50s and older, it's also an opportunity for baby boomers or senior citizens to be together. And one thing about GCN is that we mean an age-diverse organization, so families, children, and up are welcome on our programs.
You talked about that construction projects tend to be what you're focusing on more than anything else as you're working with the indigenous communities. And then you talk about 50 and older, and some of us who are approaching 50 very quickly start to wonder about whether that's a match for us doing construction or whatever. Can you describe your volunteers? Can you give us a couple examples of people who volunteer for you?
Well, two-thirds of our volunteers are women.
Interesting.
Women are very attracted to this kind of experience. They're very compassionate in the work that they do and in their contributions, and they see that this is a way for themselves or maybe a woman and a friend, a woman and a partner, a woman and a sister. And then also we have a lot of mothers coming to us and saying, I'm interested in going on this kind of an experience with my child to have a meaningful experience and show little Johnny or Maria another way of life. The other demographics of our volunteers would include, as I just mentioned, some sort of family combination. But I would say that the majority of people that travel with us do range between probably 30 and 55 years old. And then the second group after that would be the youth, because the one area, I guess, that we don't see as many as the kind of the university-aged individuals, and that's because I think oftentimes they're looking for credit or possibly in more of a longer-term program, and our programs are short-term. They're 1 to 3 weeks long, and so that's the other demographic that we see are individuals that are maybe a little bit more pressed for time.
Okay. No, I certainly understand when you talk about mothers. I'm not a mother, but I do have two kids and was thrilled when they were able to take part, not on a trip that I went on, but in a similar trip down to Tijuana doing volunteer work, building some houses in the poorer communities. And it's just something that I wanted them to experience because it does give you, for one thing, a different perspective on your own culture when you come back.
There are many motivating reasons for this kind of experience in addition to giving back and contributing. Another one is the camaraderie and sharing that meaningful experience with a family or, like as you mentioned, allowing children to have that kind of eye-opening experience and seeing not it's us versus them, but it's us all together. And I did want to get back to your question, too, about what the 50 older, what that crowd could do. And while there is this project going on and it may require some sort of physical labor, we do stress that there's always something for everyone. And so while maybe the construction on a health center, sometimes it can be as simple as hauling some sand, sifting sand. The project usually occurs in the morning, followed by a community lunch. And in the afternoon, there's opportunity for interacting with the community members in weavings and classes and lessons, learning, educational forums at the clinics. I mean, there's always just such a wide variety because the goal is to really immerse yourself in the daily lives of the village people and to see how they live.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that you didn't get the job as the director of GCN because you answered an ad in a newspaper.
That's a pretty fair assumption.
Okay. So what was your personal experience with how you got so involved in volunteer travel?
Well, as a youth, I was fortunate enough to have an experience to go on an alternative project when I was in high school. It was very eye-opening for me. It was an ecological project in Dominica in the Caribbean. And it was my first taste of what alternative travel is. And everyone is pretty aware of a lot of what the mass tourism opportunities are. But I was really touched by that experience and very moved that at that time, someone was raising my awareness and my realization and my conscientiousness about supporting the local economy versus buying all the souvenirs that you would buy on a cruise ship, per se. And so there was something that really resonated with that experience for me. And then it just kind of prompted a lifetime of seeking those kind of experiences, learning a second language, doing research and study abroad in college, and just one experience led after another. So I am definitely a promoter and supporter of individuals that are looking for an alternative to the mass tourism, which I think can sometimes have such a negative effect that we're not aware of.
So to get a little more specific and to bound the expectations, what was the best day that you've had doing this and then the worst day?
Okay, let me think. It's a great question. It's a difficult question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is going to be the best or the hardest day, but here's a day that I'll never forget. I have traveled to Ecuador numerous times and have a relationship with the country and the people, as my partner is from Ecuador. And I was leading a group last summer, and we had been in the village for about 8 days, and we were working on a multi-use court, which would be a basketball court, a volleyball court, and a soccer field, mm-hmm. all in one. It was an ingenious idea. It was great. And we were waiting for the frame to come, and we stood at the edge of the river because there really wasn't a road into the community, and anything would have to come by passing it over the river, actually. And we waited, and in my heart of hearts, I was conflicted because I suspected that the frame wasn't going to be finished and that we weren't going to have the opportunity to actually install it before our group had to leave.
Sure.
But I wanted so much to believe that it would, and we waited, and sure enough, the gentleman who ran across the river to get the message came back and said, "It's not done. It was promised for today, but it's not done, and it'll come back." And I know that those of us, the volunteers, felt just very saddened by the experience. And yet we looked at the eyes of the villagers in their faces, and they weren't as affected. And mm-hmm. it was just such sure. a learning moment to know that this is kind of the life that they live, and it'll come. It just won't come on our time. It'll come on their time. And they weren't as affected. So it was a huge learning moment, even after all this time.
Mañana is the phrase that we sometimes have dealt with in Mexico, for instance, with things just not quite lining up to the same kind of schedules and deadlines that we get used to. But you're right, there is a different sense of time and sense of urgency.
Another experience that it was really significant for me was when I took my 7-year-old daughter with me to Mexico. Mm. And being, as you mentioned, you know, the director of an organization that promotes cross-cultural exchanges, et cetera, and we understand that there's a cycle, you know, one prepares, one is in the moment, one may be experiencing culture shock, one may come back and even sometimes have difficulty in reentry.
Sure.
And even though I deal with that on a daily basis, and I myself have maybe sometimes become a little bit desensitized to the cycle and to the experience. And on my way back, someone brought to my attention that my 7-year-old was really quiet for many days after and said, you know, is something bugging her? Is something? And it came to my realization that she was actually experiencing reverse culture shock. Mm-hmm. When I asked, "Ananda, how are you feeling? What's happening for you?" And she was reminded of an experience that had happened in Mexico as she was playing hide and seek with the children. And she said, you know, Mom, they didn't have any shoes. And so we talked about the experience, but it was just kind of, again, mind-blowing for me to think that, oh, you know, here's my own daughter. We've had this significant experience, and she's in this moment right now.
Mm-hmm. Biggest surprise you've had doing this work?
I think a pleasant surprise is that this really works, this person-to-person diplomacy, this getting to meet other cultures, this befriending others. It's not about the big companies, the big checks, the big organizations. I mean, it really is significant, the on-the-ground, grassroots, person-to-person, I'd like to meet you, I'd like to understand, and I'd like to learn more about you. And therefore, others like to learn more about U.S. Americans and Canadians and other citizens as well.
And then if you could get a little more specific in terms of what we would expect if we actually went someplace with GCN, what countries are you in, first of all?
We partner here in the United States with several Native American reservations,
okay.
as well First Nations in Canada. We are in Mexico, Ecuador, Peru, Guatemala. We're in Africa and Asia, Kenya and Tanzania specifically, and Nepal and Thailand.
Wow, okay. And then the last 3 projects, for instance, that GCN volunteers have done, just to give us a taste.
Let's see. One of the newer projects that we've been working on is the one I mentioned earlier in Cantel, Guatemala, with the Youth Empowerment Project.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also returned from Pokhara Valley in Nepal, where we've been working with the Tibetan refugees. It's an interesting project there with the Lodric Committee, who is working on basically providing citizenship for the individuals that currently have no state that they belong to.
Interesting.
That's a significant project. It's a very remote area. It's hard to get to, but it's one there. I know that the trip participants come back and just feel so moved that they've been able to be there. So we have different kinds of relationships with our host communities. I think it's really significant. In some cases, we partner directly with the tribal councils. Uh-huh. In others, we work with NGOs. In others, we work with women's co-op. In some, we work on a very grassroots level with the communities, with the actual community leadership.
And just in case anybody is not familiar with the lingo, non-governmental organizations, NGOs.
Yeah, you were asking about the three most significant projects, and it's really hard. They're all distinct.
Sure.
We're doing, it's great work everywhere we go, and different needs are coming up at each time. And we're there really just to collaborate with the community on whatever it is that they're kind of currently working on.
And so, what's the average group size?
Our groups are small. They range anywhere from 4 to 12 individuals. We intentionally keep the group small in order to not really compromise the experience for either the group itself, to allow them time to reflect and talk through the experience, and then also for the community to be really respectful. In no way, shape, or form do we want to come in. It's kind of like an overwhelming presence
sure.
in the community.
Mm-hmm. And also don't want to impinge on their resources too much, I imagine.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's really a respectful encounter, and it's actually a question, too, that's asked of them. And oftentimes they would suggest more is better, and so we listen to that. If they're comfortable with more people, we'll add a couple more people.
And then are you providing a guide who is going along with the group, or are they meeting the guide at the site typically, or how does that work?
Yeah, Global Citizen sends a trained team leader, a team leader that's been trained in our philosophy and mm-hmm. then also the logistics of that country. That person will accompany the group, and usually everybody meets in the designated city, which is often the capital city of the country.
Uh-huh.
And then from there they travel together, but the host contact also meets us at the designated site.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
nice.
And
so it's kind of co-leaders, actually, you know,
okay.
one representative from the community and then one representative from the organization.
And then what kind of cost? I know it's going to vary depending on whether we're going to Arizona or Tibet.
Our program fees range anywhere from $900 to $2,400, depending on where you go and for how long, if it's a week to 3 weeks long.
And then it's not counting airfare, I assume.
Airfare is in addition to that,
okay.
as well as any visa costs or any immunizations that would be needed.
Okay.
But the program fee does cover your lodging, transportation, food, and a portion of it goes to the project.
Okay. And then, without using last names, can you tell me about three of your favorite volunteers?
Wow. Let's see. Well, we really appreciate the volunteers that return. I think it's just testimony to
sure.
the experience that they have had. I know of a very spectacular, extravagant, marvelous volunteer we have. She is a 93-year-old woman
oh my goodness.
From the East Coast, and she has traveled with Global Citizens over 6 times to most of our domestic sites and a couple international. There was a time period where she was advised by her doctor to not travel, and so she didn't, and most recently she got the go-ahead again, and she joined us last spring in Kentucky, and she is quite an amazing person. She is right there. They were repainting the historical building, Faith Hill Community Center in Appalachia, Kentucky. And there she was, Peggy, right up in front every morning, painting and doing more than some of the 20-year-olds that were on the trip.
That's
so
great.
She's a pretty spectacular participant. I think some of the other participants that have had really, truly meaningful experiences are the youth. One thing that is really important to us is that the youth, and I'm speaking mostly about individuals between 11 and 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
feel like that they are full members of the team, that they have a voice. And when they're going into the communities and learning, being part of the negotiations, kind of the team decisions, that they're there right in the forefront. And where oftentimes I think they feel like they may not have a voice here in the United States, on a GCN team trip and in another country, there's absolutely a place for them.
And the most amazing GCN work site you've been at?
One of the most amazing sites that I visited was actually the first community in Llanos de Morales, Guatemala. And I think what really struck me with that community was how every single member of the community contributed, from the toddlers to the elders, were there working on the project, which was repairs at the school, building a wall, putting a fence around. Absolutely everybody was there participating. A true example of community contribution.
Okay. And then on that line, part of the thing that I think that is amazing about these sort of experiences where you are working with the community is meeting the people in the community. So can you tell us about one or two people that you've met through this that you're just so glad you've gone on these kind of experiences because you get to meet people like this?
Yeah, two amazing women that I met on my last trip to Tumbatu, Ecuador, which is an Afro-Ecuadorian community. Their names are Marisol and Esperanza. And these women are absolutely amazing. They are one of the most marginalized communities living in Ecuador. I would even say oftentimes more so than the indigenous people, which actually are very organized and have a strong presence in Ecuador. And these women have raised their children. They work in the fields. They go into the city and work as maids to provide for the family. And when our group went last summer, they completely embraced us. They put aside their family responsibilities and attended to the group, made sure everyone felt completely welcome, integrated us into their community with their families, answered our questions, showed us around, and just really participated in a collaborative way with the group. We keep in touch continuously. They're awaiting the next group. They're just so moved. And given the opportunity to leave their community as they have had and go into the city for full-time work or even in some cases immigrate to the United States, they strongly stand up for their community and say no, and they're there to make a difference. And I think they'll be there for quite a while to come. So two amazing women.
Interesting. And of course, the name of the second one would mean hope.
Yes.
Which yes. Seems terribly appropriate.
Exactly.
As we wrap this up, any other thoughts that you'd like to leave with people as they think about this kind of opportunity?
I think that for a lot of people, this feels like once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. For some, it's something that maybe you've been dreaming about, something that you want to do. And I really believe, this is really cliche, but if there's a will, there's a way. I mean, if somebody has an interest and time is a factor, or possibly the program fee may be a hindrance, give us a call. Let us know. We'll be happy to talk about everyone's situation. Again, I think there really is something out there for everyone. We offer a wide variety of time commitments, a week, up to 3 weeks. And no matter what time you can allow or commit, there really is going to be something for everyone. So give us a call and let us know. We'd be happy to talk about everyone.
Where there's a will, there's a way. Do some of the youth, for instance, or the other people actually get sponsorships from their community to do some of these trips?
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of the greatest things is that we allow for, there's fundraising, a lot of fundraising is done, you know, right? 10 letters, that's for $100 from 10 friends, you're able to sponsor your trip. We have limited financial award assistance mm-hmm. that we can give out as well. Again, the program fee is tax deductible, and so people are able to make donations on your behalf.
Oh, okay. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, and the one thing I forgot to mention mm-hmm. was that Global Citizens belongs to an umbrella organization, kind of an alliance called the International Volunteer Program Association. It's IVPA.
Oh, okay.
And they have a link. And that'd be important to note just because it's an alliance of organizations out there doing very similar work that adhere to the best practices in the field.
Okay.
And I didn't really allude to this very well earlier, but a lot of people, when they start to do the research for this kind of experience, they're, what are the criteria, what are the determining factors that will help me decide who I should travel with?
Right.
And that website can be helpful. The other thing is that, again, as I mentioned, it's kind of showing who's out there following best practices in order to make sure that the organization you're going with isn't kind of the footsteps that they're leaving behind aren't too, the imprints aren't too
sure.
negative, the impact wouldn't be too negative on the community, that they're taking a lot of the consideration, you know, these considerations in mind. So,
okay, great.
If there's an opportunity, because you'd mentioned to learn about other organizations, like say ours just doesn't work for somebody
sure.
because we go at a very specific time of year, they could look at IVPA and they'd be able to find one of the other 10 organizations that may have more availability.
Okay, great. Well, I thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us a little bit about this different kind of opportunity for travel, and just appreciate you sharing your experience with us.
Great, thank you.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that's an article I've been waiting for just this opportunity to pass along. And it's an article from BraveNewTraveler.com called 10 Reasons Why Volunteering is Better Than Travel. I'll just read you a couple of these. Eating banana pancakes and lying in a hammock is a great way to live. I won't deny it. But through volunteer work, you can be proud of what you did today rather than reveling in doing nothing. I like number three. You learn the language. That includes the swear words. And if you've ever done construction with someone, you know the truth in that statement. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In news from the community, Elizabeth wrote me a while ago, didn't read this letter when it first came. Chris, I'm addicted to your podcast. I catch up on all your podcasts during my evening runs. I would say I'm more than an amateur traveler, but not by much. I'm a 29-year-old second grade teacher in Orlando, Florida. I've been traveling all my life, but more intensely in the last 10 years. My first solo adventure was exciting, thrilling, and empowering at age 20. I realized I'd been bitten by the travel bug during the 2 month journey, getting to know myself and the world. I go to most places twice, actually, when some people just desire to go once. I like to go places and see things that most people wouldn't dream of doing. I've been through Europe many times on different styles of travel, independent, tour groups. I've been to Brazil several times and to the Galapagos Islands. I've backpacked the east coast of Australia twice. I enjoyed Fiji and the Hawaiian Islands. I love traveling the U.S. also. I'm a native Floridian and have lived in Orlando for 9 years. And Elizabeth is also an expert in Walt Disney World, has been a VIP tour guide for 9 years, and has offered her services. So if you're interested in knowing more about Disney, let me know and we'll get Elizabeth on the show to talk about Disney World. We haven't talked about Disney in a little bit. And then I also heard from Barbara just this week saying, I recently discovered your podcast and love it. I'm going through the episode. I stumbled upon an interview, episode 84, with Scott and Cheryl, A Year in Europe, who I also enjoy very much. I thought it was a great podcast, and you asked so many questions I had been wondering after just recently discovering and listening to their Year in Europe podcast. You mentioned having them on once they return from their trip. Any chance that may still happen? Thanks, and keep up the good work. I wrote back to Barbara, but I was a little surprised that I had just completely forgotten about doing that. Scott and I actually met after they came back, after Scott and Cheryl came back to the area, because until recently they lived in this area before their trip to Europe, but we had actually never met. So we had met through the podcast online and only face-to-face after they got back. But we actually didn't talk about having them back on the show. I'm not quite sure why. Probably won't do it at this point. I'll probably talk to somebody else who's doing a similar sort of thing instead, but let me know if there's a great outcry. Again, I'll change my plans. I still intend to get up the new travel wiki this weekend. Of course, I said that last weekend, so keep an eye out for that. And with that, I think we'll wrap up this show. Again, if you're interested in doing a meetup in May in the London, England area, go to the discussion boards where I've got a question about whether people are interested in doing that. If you have any comments on the show, amateurtraveler.com is where you can find all the details. Feel free to send me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And remember, we do have the new comment line that you can both call in or have me call you back for free from the voicemail system. And go to amateurtraveler.com/contact for all of that information. And as always, thanks so much for listening.